what do you think, from your perspective, if a male had posted that tweet? Like, do you think that there would be that same level of backlash? Or
100% no. Mm-hmm. I could go on every social media right now mm-hmm. and say I now want to be referred to as King, Doctor. I could
Messiah.
Find every Messiah. Yeah, exactly. I could just put it all on and then change my like username mm-hmm. to whatever absurd thing mm-hmm. that we would make up, and people would find it funny and they'd probably play along. Mm-hmm. Hello and welcome to Do You Even Science, a podcast where we discuss what's happening in Canadian science and policy and everything in between. We're your hosts. I'm Simon Landry, or is that Dr. Simon Landry? And I have with me Dina Hamza, who goes by Dr. Dina Hamza.
Hashtag immodest women.
So, Dina, last episode, you introduced yourself as Dr. Dina Hamza. Mm-hmm. Hashtag immodest women, mm-hmm. as you just pointed out. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this hashtag. And actually, you know what? When you said that we were going to have an episode about a hashtag, I thought it was daring on your part, because hashtags are really popular for like 3 days.
This is true.
And so I feel like in internet time,
the wave hashtag has immodest.
Yeah, it has passed. I actually was looking at analytics yesterday, and I think two people tweeted about it like yesterday.
Oh no. But so we're
I know.
We missed the party. But I think the party is going to carry on.
We'll carry the party forward. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about hashtag immodest women and kind of the, I think it's not necessarily the hashtag, but more what it represents. And kind of ultimately, it's about equal rights, feminism, mm-hmm. all of that mm-hmm. in science.
Yeah, absolutely. So before diving into that, though, Simon. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's my job, right? We made a pact that I would keep you honest. Mm-hmm. Regarding your make right project.
Is that a thing?
But that's what there's the term, it's make work project. So that's when you mm-hmm. develop a new intervention or some kind of new approach, and people are like, well, this is just a make work project. You're just giving me something that will mm-hmm. make me work more, but it's not really going to do anything to help me. Or yes. help the process, or you know, streamline or make things more efficient. It's a make work project. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I'm calling this your make right project, which is
I like that.
Making it right with your participants from your PhD project.
And it's also a great term, because it was work to do. So I like that. Maybe it'll become a thing. Maybe we can. Maybe it'll become trending.
And we should trademark this. With our knowledge mobilization RV.
Exactly. I honestly love the idea of the RV, and I hope it becomes a recurring thing.
I think it will be. And I think that if we have enough academics on board, we can make this happen.
I definitely think so. And actually, you know what? Hmm. I went to this event, I think last week, and I met someone who, she, shout out to Jean Chow, if you're listening to this, and she does these networking sessions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we need to get BBC science journalist superstar, Matt McGraw. We need to get Jean Chow to do networking. I don't know, we can do like a thing on podcasts, and you've got yourself a pretty solid sort of workshop thing right there.
Can we like integrate fashion into that?
I don't see why not.
I mean, I can help people dress for the part.
Express
themselves through fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be super.
Let's translate important. Our knowledge through fashion. Let's print off our p-values and all of our statistical tests and create dresses out of them.
Only dresses, though, Dina?
Dresses, skirts, pants, shorts, t-shirts, anything that you'd like.
I read something recently that said that weaving, I think, was actually the one of the most important inventions for humankind. And the idea was that without weaving, you couldn't create rope, which was then used, or not, maybe not weaving, but like making fabric.
Yeah.
And then rope was used to make bridges, to make kind of everything. And so the wheel, yeah, it's like, it's a big deal. And it's like, it's pretty good, I guess, making circular shapes out of rock. That's pretty good. But the actual, the true innovation of humanity is fabric and strings and stuff. And I thought that was really interesting because ultimately you can't get very far if you can't like make a fabric, really.
This is true, yeah. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. Yeah, true.
So, yeah, anyway, I thought that was neat. Yeah.
So what have you done with your make right? I want to hear progress, Simon. I want deliverables.
You don't want me to just meander and talk about these random things that I read?
No.
Okay.
What can you deliver for us today?
Okay, so I can deliver the whole thing today.
What?
I actually sent it out yesterday. I did.
Wow. I did. Can you give us like a breakdown of how did you even approach that? Remember we were saying that like, does it start with kind of like an apology in the intro? Mm-hmm. Or like, how did you create your like intro for it?
I printed it out. I'm going to read you word for word what I sent. Yeah, it's French though. So, well, not though, I'm not apologizing for it being French. So it's French and do you understand French?
I do, but can you translate it just in case I get it wrong?
Of course. So I'll read it in French and then I'll do the translation. Okay. So, bonjour, tu reçois ce courriel car il y a quelques années tu as participé à une recherche à l'Université de Montréal avec moi. Je t'avais demandé si tu voulais plus d'informations sur les résultats de cette recherche et tu m'avais dit oui, mais je n'ai jamais pris la peine à t'écrire ce message. Désolé. J'ai même parlé de mes regrets de ne pas t'avoir envoyé ce courriel plus tôt sur ma balado-diffusion. And then there's a link to this podcast. Merci encore d'avoir participé à ces recherches. C'est grâce à toi que j'ai pu terminer mon doctorat en 2017. Sans plus tarder, voici les résultats des recherches. Did you understand any of that?
A bit.
All right. So they,
I heard about an apology. I heard that, you know, it's about your research, 2016. Did I get that right?
2017, yeah.
Was it 17? Sorry.
It was 17. I may have said 2016. I'm not good with numbers, strangely enough. So basically it's, hello, you're receiving this email because a few years ago you participated in a research at the University of Montreal with me. I asked you if you wanted more information on the results from this research, and you said yes, but I never took the time to write you this message. Sorry.
I actually like that, Simon. I never took the time to write you this message. I think that's really honest.
Yeah. I even talked about these regrets of not having sent you this email earlier on my podcast. And then there's a link to the podcast. Thanks again for having participated. It's thanks to you that I was able to finish my PhD in 2017. Without further ado, here are the results.
That is stellar.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, Simon.
Oh, thank you.
Good job. So you sent that out yesterday?
I did, yesterday or 2 days ago, and I got one from my friend.
Okay.
And he was like, wow, good job for, like, there's this word in French, vaillant, he's French, so he said vaillant, but it means, like, not valiant, but, like, someone who does work. I don't know.
I would interpret that as, like, valiant, I think, is kind of, like, I don't know how else it would be translated. And I know that there's certain terms in different languages that you can't translate exactly. But I think that was noble of you to,
noble in the way that
go back into time and make right. Yeah, so your make exactly. right project, good for you, Simon. I'm impressed.
Achieved. And I got an email from another participant who was like, thank you. Congrats on the PhD.
Great. Okay.
So yeah.
So how did you feel after that?
I felt, I actually felt relieved because every month I set out a list of things I want to achieve.
Right.
For example, this month I've got record to do even science podcast, all the important stuff.
Of course, and that's like number one.
One of those things was send out that newsletter.
Right.
So it felt really good to be able to check that off my list, and now it's done. And
but I mean, in terms of remember in that one episode, you know, regrets, I've had a few. You said that it was almost like this haunting feeling that you had said that you would do something, and it was that accountability to your participants who really afforded you the opportunity to complete your PhD in that area. And gave up their time and energy, right? So I guess in that aspect, I'm just wondering, like, did you feel a sense of relief that you took action, or has it not sunk in yet?
I don't think it's sunk in yet.
Yeah.
I think it's the sort of thing where when I look back on my PhD, it won't be like, I wish I would have done this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of removes that regret. Essentially, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
So, no, I'm happy. I'm happy, one, that you encouraged me to do this. So thank you very much, Dina.
You're welcome, Simon.
And we've
created a new term. This is our hashtag make right project.
we'll see how far that goes. And I think the important thing for my job, at least, is that now I know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think this is really the essence of knowledge mobilization for you.
Yeah.
Is that even
100%.
If it's after the fact, how do you go about it? And I think I really like the content of the letter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. And because I sent it through MailChimp, maybe I'll write it up to show any listener.
I think it would be great if you could post it just so that other people can have a template of, you know, perhaps they're in a similar situation and they haven't had the opportunity to go back to their participants. And here's how I went about it. So I think for having you as a role model to that approach would be beneficial to others.
Oh, well, if it can be beneficial to others. And we can brand it. We can just have some heavy DYES branding on it.
You could just take out like the research, the study name, your name, the year, and then just sell it. And just tell people,
exactly.
Here's this template, just insert your information.
Exactly. That's, I actually have been thinking about that a little bit. Mm. Now we're veering off course again.
But this is important. This make right, is a very important part of really engaging with the community. And as we said in previous episodes, that's really the part that's missing in academia. And I think it's an area that perhaps we're progressing in, some of us, but it's not a, I don't want to say standardized approach, but we want it to be something that's consistently done in research.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like, I don't know how you would do this, but I would kind of like for there to be some sort of an automated newsletter system of some sort, because ultimately what it is, the newsletter, like, you've got that little intro that was, you know, I wrote based on how I felt, but the content is super easy to write. It's basically just what was the experiment, just so they remember, because it was like two, 3 years ago. So here's what I ask you to do, and then here is the figure, like the results, a graphical representation of the results, and here is what those results mean. Kind of like just walk you through the results, and that's basically it. You don't need to go into this long discussion about, like, well, the neural correlates of blah blah blah,
and it's like, here's these p-values and the clinical significance and the magnitude of the effect and
yeah, exactly. And it's actually really, it was actually really fun to write it out, because you kind of just say, hey, we found that musicians are faster than non-musicians.
Yeah, it's just down to that lay level that's understandable. So Please do post it, Simon, and I want you to use the hashtag MakeRightProject.
All right, great. Hopefully it's not like a thing. There's not some movie somewhere that used it for, I don't know, we'll see.
Hopefully not.
All right, so that was that, and I'm happy I did it, and thank you once again, Dr. Dina Hamza, for encouraging me.
That's right, Dr. Dina Hamza. Yeah. Don't you forget it. So back to our topic for today, which is the hashtag Immodest Women. So, Simon, this movement began with a tweet, the hashtag. So the hashtag Immodest Women began with a tweet posted by Dr. Fern Riddell, who is an expert in Victorian and Edwardian eras, specifically in the area of sex, suffrage, and entertainment. And she posted this tweet, which reads, "My title is Dr. Fern Riddell, not Ms. or Miss Riddell. I have it because I am an expert, and my life and career consist of being that expert in as many different ways as possible. I worked hard to earn my authority, and I will not give it up to anyone." And this was in response. So Dr. Fern Riddell had posted this in response to Boston Globe and Mail's new mandate that they will only use the term title, or the title doctor, if you are a medical practitioner. That is the only time that you would be referred to as doctor. And I think what was interesting, and there are various articles which we will post or we'll tweet about, or we'll have it on a link there. But there's one posted by Dr. Fern Riddell. This was on June 16th, and it's on newsstatesman.com. And this is what she writes. And I found that the content, regardless of what your PhD is in, applies. Yeah. I was going to use the word resonate, but just as we overuse the word innovate, I think we overuse the word resonate. That's just my personal perspective. So Dr. Fern Riddell writes in this article, "For a historian, a PhD is a marker that you have spent years researching and writing an original piece of knowledge, something utterly unique that then becomes part of our historical record and is examined by the leading authorities in your field. It is the hardest thing you will ever do as an academic. No journal article, no job, no promotion comes with the same doubt, fear, and determination to prove yourself as the process of a PhD. They make them hard for a reason, because your work and your right to be an authority on your subject has to be rigorously tested." And I think that is just so powerful.
She writes very well.
Like, doesn't
that was
she?
Really beautiful.
Yeah, she writes really well. But I mean, I think that applies to any field in which you have accomplished a PhD. And I think it is this idea. And I think part of it is reading her approach to why it's important, why she's an authority, and why she should be recognized with the title doctor. I think it just shows how it confirms. It's like this affirmation piece of all the work that you put into to be awarded a doctorate.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of work. And I think in the process, and we've mentioned that in previous podcasts, in my experience, I think my PhD was just, you know, I hit the ground running. And I don't think I fully embraced the experience or had the opportunity to really feel what was happening, or like the impact of what I was creating and what I was doing.
Yeah, that's a tough, that's... Do you think you can fully sort of grasp the weight of what it is you're working towards?
At the time, personally, no. Like, I think I felt that what I was doing was something that was significant, something that was important, and I have a lot of passion and dedication to prevention and early intervention approaches for mental health and addiction.
Right, right.
So it's like that passion, that drive behind it. But I think it's this idea that you are, like how she writes, you are creating something, an original piece of knowledge that then becomes part of our historical record. And I don't know if I really acknowledged that's what I accomplished in my PhD.
Yeah. There's this, I don't know if you've seen this. I'll try to find it and post it online. But there's this like graphic drawing thing that it's kind of like, this is the sum of human knowledge, and then it zooms in, zooms in, zooms in, and then at the last panel or whatever, it's like,
does it have like one person?
No. Oh. No, it's like, this is what you do when you have a PhD or when you publish your dissertation or whatever, and there's just a tiny sort of bump.
So it's like the one, but is it that it's like each person contributes and then it's like this cumulative, is that what the diagram is showing?
I guess I'll have to share it, but ultimately what it is that you're pushing knowledge. So it's just like a visual it's a much less elegant way of representing what she wrote, basically.
But I think that visual is important. So on the note of visual, so when Dr. Mm-hmm. Fern Riddell had posted this tweet and said, you know, refer to me as doctor, not Ms., not Miss. There was a lot of pushback or this backlash from men who would respond to her tweet. And it was this idea that, isn't this a pretentious approach? You're arrogant. And so that's where this idea of immodest women, that here we are saying we are accomplished individuals and we deserve the title that we have worked so hard to achieve, to be awarded a doctorate. And as Dr. Fern Riddell wrote, the rigor of the process itself. I mean, you could speak to anyone about their experience with their PhD, and there's a lot of growing pains. There's a lot of trials and tribulations throughout. So based on this backlash from all of these men, there is an individual by the name of Ralph Harrington who dedicated a comic to Dr. Fern Riddell. I will tweet it out to our DYES crew. But essentially this comic has this one woman who kind of looks like Audrey Hepburn-esque. And she's sitting in a defiant pose on a chair with her arms crossed. And she has all of these men leaning over her desk, standing behind her, standing in front of her. Another man who's completely not even paying attention and disregarding her. And each one, it's all these different comments that were related to the backlash from Dr. Fern Riddell's tweet. And so, you know, reading some of these here is smacks of insecurity or perhaps pomposity, mere entry level qual. Check out this vulgar elitism. I think you sound just a little bit aught and arrogant. And then the one who the complete disregard is, never heard of her before. So I mean, so this comic has been created, or like you're no better off being a doctor as you imply, that even your level of expertise, I mean, it just completely disregarded. So I have a question for you, Simon. In this case, this was a woman that had said, and this is in regard to having a PhD, that here Boston Globe and Mail is saying, well, if you're not a medical practitioner, sorry, you're not going to be referred to as doctor. What do you think, from your perspective, as a male, if a male had posted that tweet?
I think,
like, do you think that there would be that same level of backlash, or
100% no? I could go on every social media right now and say I now want to be referred to as King Doctor, like I could
Messiah.
Find every Messiah. Yeah, exactly. I could just put it all on and then change my like username to whatever absurd thing that we would make up, and people would find it funny and they'd probably play along. I guarantee you there would be zero backlash. And if there would be backlash, no, I can't even imagine that there would be backlash, actually.
But do you think that it's a gender? Yeah. Like, I think maybe that there are multiple layers to this argument.
So it reminds me, this is going to be another sort of tangential connection, but it reminds me of, do you watch The Bachelor?
No.
Okay.
So just for our audience to know, and this is something that I recurrently encounter with various colleagues. I was raised by immigrants. So if you want to ask me about like the top series during Ramadan in Egypt, yeah, I can recount everything that has happened. I can tell you, you know, the best movie stars, you know, things about their life. But unless it's about crime, murder, substance misuse, mental health, I probably won't know anything about it.
I'm not really
into reality TV.
There you go. That's don't bring the whole like immigrant story.
No, but see, here's the thing. I have mentors that are like, they will make a pop culture reference.
Oh yeah.
And I have no clue what they're talking about.
Oh yeah.
They're shocked. And I'm like, my house is Egypt. I mean, so sorry. Right.
I'll have to find Bachelor Egypt and then make references to that, and then you'll be like, what are you talking about?
They should do that.
I'm sure it exists. So on the reason why I ask you that is because a few years ago there was this guy, I forget his name, he was super forgettable, but but his deal was that
hashtag super forgettable.
Yeah. I can see his face.
Aren't they all forgettable? But, or is it just me? All, like, I feel like they're all just the same.
No, there are some that are memorable. Well, I'm not going to get into it, but basically so there's this guy, I forget his name. He was a farmer and he,
he was like a millionaire.
No, he was just like a poor...
Hair? Oh, okay, never mind.
No, he was just like a regular farmer.
Okay.
and so he was there with like, I don't know, at some point, let's say 8 women. Mm-hmm. And some of these women were like lawyers and doctors and like accomplished people. And this guy is on his own show about him. Mm-hmm. And you could actually see that he was insecure speaking with the lawyer or whatever. And he, like, the way, if you have the chance, I might post before you carry on,
Simon, can you give me just a brief kind of summary or, like, synopsis of the difference between The Bachelor and Big Brother?
Oh, I don't watch Big Brother, so I don't know.
Okay, because I don't know. So what is... So The Bachelor is you're either male or female, and they're always in a heterosexual...
Yes.
Like, it's the goal is a heterosexual relationship.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you're either male or female, and then you're matched with... Or like, you're presented, I guess, with...
You're presented, yeah. So like, on The Bachelor, you've got... man that has, like, I guess, I don't want to say harem, but that's kind of what it is, I guess.
So The Bachelor isn't necessarily and I don't want to use the word accomplished, because that's like level, like, accomplishment can mean very different, various things. So is it that this individual is just like your everyday Joe, or is it like this is a famous person?
I mean, it depends on your definition of famous. So there was last season, The Bachelor was this guy, Ari something, who is a race car driver, but like not a famous race car driver.
Okay.
Some of them.
Like, can it just be somebody like your neighbor?
Yeah. That's the idea.
How do they choose them?
I think they audition and they probably take the craziest ones.
Okay, so like if you wanted to be The Bachelor, you would like submit an application, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But here's the like sneaky part about The Bachelor is that, so you've got The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and then Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh.
And so, yeah. And so on The Bachelor, it's a man who's looking for a wife, I guess.
Okay. So the intention is marriage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What if they don't get married? Is that when you see like upset. Those tabloids where it's like they're engaged and then it's like, or they were married for like a year and then they got divorced?
It,
oh.
I don't think it works out very often.
Okay. So also, that's bachelor. Bachelorette but, is that it's a woman looking for a husband.
Yeah. And yeah, but the thing, so the thing though is that they usually take runner-ups from the bachelor on the bachelorette and vice versa, so that you're invested in this character and you're like, oh, and so in this case it was like Becky got dumped by Ari on last season. Now she's on so the bachelorette.
Oh, so if she's the runner-up.
Yeah. Well, so this season she was actually the winner, and then the Bachelor dumped her.
Oh, and then went the for the finale. I recall hearing something about this.
Yeah.
So then she would become the Bachelorette.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And so you're kind of stuck in this loop because you're like, I've been watching this person for I don't know, like 3 or 4 months. Now I can just watch this one sort of contestant do go through the show, and you're like, she deserves love, so I just want her to get it. And anyway, so that's the way it works. And then you've got Bachelor in Paradise, where they take all the quirky runner-ups that didn't really win, put them on an island, I guess, or like on a beach, and then just wait. Like, it's all a bunch of attractive people who drink a lot of alcohol, so you know,
and do some not so smart things, I assume.
So yeah, that's the Bachelor franchise. And this is actually my dream tie-in to have Do Even Science tie in with the Bachelor. So my partner, who's a psychologist, we watch it together.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get her to do a podcast or a YouTube show or whatever with me that would be called Doctor's Opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And it would just be us talking about The Bachelor and what happened.
Yeah.
But apparently she, something about the code of ethics kind of prevents her from, I don't know, giving professional advice.
Yeah. Or even the idea of, and I learned this from my mentor. Do you remember there was a point in time? Well, I think the point in time has continued, but at the very beginning, when there was questions if Donald Trump was mean or mad, I think there was an article in that, mean, or like, is he just a mean, bad person, or does he have a mental illness? Mm. And actually, my mentor from my PhD, Dr. Peter Silverstone, had written an article saying that, for one, it's really hard to make this type of diagnosis. Just by seeing somebody on media or reading articles about them. That's one part of it, and the ethics of doing that. And then the other part is, you know, in his perspective, that we can't just say that anyone who does something that goes outside of our norms or what we consider normative behavior is then mentally ill. So I can see where there's this challenge, and if you're in that profession, I guess it's the same as like any other type of medical practitioner. I mean, you're not going to be on Twitter and somebody tells you, these are my symptoms. What do I have? And I think that type of analysis, it would be really interesting to see, you know, how somebody in a mental health field would analyze, I guess, contestants of Bachelorette or Bachelor. But I think that, from a professional perspective, that would be really challenging from ethics and so on.
Yeah.
Unless you make a huge repeated disclaimer.
That would be the name of the show, not professional advice.
Disclaimer.
So yeah, to go back to this guy who's, it's really frustrating that I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up. Mm-hmm. And so he was on the show. It was his show. And he was still insecure with these accomplished women. And so I think that's kind of, to bring it back to the tweet, there's this level of privilege. Mm-hmm. Men have this level of privilege that I think is almost hard to comprehend. Like, it's hard for women to understand our level of privilege the way that it's hard for me as a man to kind of understand your experience.
We just don't have that shared experience, that lived experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In like such a subtle societal way. And
But Simon, do you think that there's various levels? Like, I think on the one hand, like how you're describing that perhaps gender, and if we go into the idea of privilege, like we're talking gender, race, socioeconomic status, I mean, all of these factors. And I want to say that we would put that in one bucket.
Mm-hmm.
The other bucket is, do you find that there's this hidden narrative between somebody that is an MD and somebody who is a PhD? So it's this idea of, and I don't know if you've experienced the same thing, because I'm immersed in the faculty of medicine.
Yeah.
And I find that it's that same type of narrative that your doctor, I'm introduced to people. I prefer to be called Dina. So with
you just
my,
go by Dina?
Yeah, with my students or...
Dr. Hamza's my mom's name.
But you know what I mean? I have people who will first refer to me as Dr. Hamza, and I will say, please call me Dina. And that was because of my training. I was trained that way. I used to say to my mentors, Dr. Silverstone. I used to say Dr. Greenshaw. And to me, that was respecting their authority.
You refer to your supervisors as Dr. last name?
In the beginning.
Huh.
And it was a firm statement from both of them. From Dr. Peter Silverstone, he said, you call me Peter. My patients call me Dr. Silverstone. Like that was, he's like, you are my trainee, you're my junior colleague. You call me Peter, I call you Dina. Otherwise, if you call me Dr. Silverstone, I will call you, at the time, Ms. Hamza.
Right.
I was still in the process of completing my PhD. So that was the conversation. And then with Andy, my other mentor, Dr. Andy Greenshaw, he told me, Dina, you know, calling me Dr. Greenshaw, I know that in perhaps in some form of a norm, that's a way of showing respect. And he said, I earn my respect. You know, you don't need to call me Dr. Greenshaw. And so it was based on that training that I followed in their footsteps. Now, what's interesting is I assumed that's the norm. That's how we operate. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that in my new position that I've had for almost 2 years now, so it's not so new, I was informed by my current mentor that I'm not permitted to call somebody by their first name until they give me permission.
Wow.
And that was challenging for me because I was trained that this is you're a junior colleague, first name basis. Now I'm considered a senior colleague, not quite at the same level as them, of course, but no longer a student, and it was this idea that I would be able to call them by their first name. And a lot of these individuals are physicians. And I find that there is some sort of divide when you say, when somebody refers to me as Dr. Hamza, the immediate question is, are you an MD?
Right.
And I don't know if you've had that same experience.
I don't think so. Well, this show, we were going to call it Not That Kind of Doctor for that reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the name was taken. But we were going to call it Not That Kind of Doctor.
So I have a completely different experience with my background. So I have a PhD in biomedical sciences, but in audiology.
Right.
And audiology is, you know, they're clinicians. It's kind of, it's like a professional master's program in Canada, at least.
Okay.
But in the States, there are AUDs, so doctors of audiology, and PhDs in audiology.
Right.
So if you're a clinician in the States, you have an AUD, but you don't necessarily have a PhD.
Right. Yeah. Which is the same as psychiatry.
Oh, what do you have?
Right. So I have a PhD in psychiatry. But you can have an MD in psychiatry.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But the challenge here, Simon, is that to earn a PhD in psychiatry can only be accomplished in two places, two universities, University of Alberta and McGill. So it's not widely known, and perhaps that's the confusion, is when people say, you know, here's Dr. Hamza, she has a doctorate in psychiatry. Maybe they're just not familiar that you can achieve a PhD in psychiatry. The automatic thought is, are you an MD?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one, because you all have the same title. Technically, you have the same title.
Yeah.
But there's like a weird hierarchy probably within the organization.
Absolutely. And I think part of it too, Simon, is how we've been discussing this idea of knowledge mobilization, knowledge transfer and exchange. Mm-hmm. Perhaps people aren't quite clear on what is a doctorate and what that means. Mm-hmm. And I think Dr. Fern Riddell, in that quote that I had mentioned earlier, just put it out there so concisely and so accurately.
Yeah. Would you go by Dina Hamza PhD rather than Dr. Dina Hamza?
So here's the interesting thing. When I graduated, I had my email signature saying Dr. Dina Hamza, PhD. And then I was told by a few colleagues that was inappropriate and unprofessional to use the title doctor.
Huh.
That it should be Dina Hamza, PhD. Now, on that same note, with the physicians that I work with, they don't put Dr. So-and-so, MD. They put their name, MD, and their other, licensing things that they've accomplished. But I have seen other colleagues that do put Dr. So-and-so that have a PhD. So I don't know what the consensus is. Perhaps it's related to your training. I don't know.
I think it's like one of those things where within the field, there are probably these heated discussions and people have very strong opinions. But when you start asking people who just don't have PhDs or don't have whatever doctorates, what I was told is that if you say Simon Landry PhD versus Dr. Simon Landry, the PhD sounds more arrogant.
Does it?
Yeah, because like...
So in my training, that was more modest.
Huh.
That was bringing it down.
Of course it would be, right?
Like, this is really modest.
Mm-hmm. So when I was registering my website, I was hesitating between Dr. Simon Landry or Simon Landry PhD, because SimonLandry.com was taken.
Yes.
And I asked around and people were like, go with doctor, 100%.
I would go with doctor as well. Mm-hmm. So I think this hashtag immodest women movement has various layers. So the first layer is that it's related to gender.
Yes.
In terms of the backlash that Dr. Fern Riddell received, and I'm sure many others received it as well. I mean, this is just the most prominent example.
It's like rampant sexism. I don't think that on the aggressor's side, it's nothing but insecurity and just wanting to knock down a woman who is like accomplished in her field and really doing amazing stuff and feeling insecure. By the way, the Bachelor contestant, his name was Chris.
Oh, you got it. You remembered.
Yeah. So it's Chris. But yeah, I think like that part is really uninteresting because it's just like men being super insecure and being like jerks to someone who is smarter than them.
So this was just an opening.
Yeah.
So this was just an opening for someone. So do you feel that it's not tied to... I'm an academic and I've accomplished this level of expertise?
I think I realize that you can't like separate the two, but if you can put the Twitter toxicity away and kind of just focus on the part where it's about titles in news reporting,
yes,
then it's really like I see where they're coming from, that you,
but why I guess, didn't like, they do something? Like, why didn't Globe and Mail, for example, Boston Globe and Mail, why didn't they say from here on out, we're going to say Dr. So-and-so, comma, MD, or comma, PhD? Like, why was it the automatic thought or reaction? And I can see perhaps they want to distinguish within their reporting, knowing individuals may not be able to, may have challenges distinguishing between the two. Mm-hmm. Although what you would be talking about, like they would be having you in their news article or as the expert on that particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still the expert in that area.
Yeah, I feel like it's this. This is probably another one of those things where it's like a really boring style guide thing on the newspaper's side, and then someone had an opinion because she's absolutely right. She is an expert, and then she shared her feelings on it, and then a bunch of dudes were like, "What are you talking about?
You're immodest.
Let's get her."
Yeah.
How dare you
praise yourself or
bring
attention to your accomplishments? I mean, that's the narrative.
Yeah.
The narrative is, here's your accomplishment. We don't want to hear about it because it's unimportant, or you think you're great.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there wouldn't have been the same level of backlash. We wouldn't be dedicating an entire podcast to this if it would have been some guy who said like, "Oh, hey, I have a PhD in like microbiology and
I have a PhD in music history and therefore you will call me Dr. So and so." People would be like, "Oh, you did a PhD, good for you."
And they'd be like, "However." Doctor. Yeah. Or like, you know what? The style guide is this way, and this is just the way we're formatting our stuff. I might be wrong, but I think it's just like another one of these examples where the internet loses its mind about something and a bunch of dudes came out of the woodwork and just like harassed a very accomplished woman. And then the good thing with this is that we're having this discussion. And you know what, Dina? Maybe this is the point. I wanted to tease you a bit about kind of having an episode on a hashtag a few weeks after it trended that I think is just really funny.
We don't follow trends, Simon. We create them.
we create them, exactly. Hashtag, what's our hashtag again?
Hashtag the, Make Right Project.
Make Right Project, exactly. But I think that if anything, the value of these hashtags, and maybe we can kind of talk about this in the last few minutes, is that it kind of creates like, it's a flashpoint.
It draws your attention to something specific that opens a conversation. I agree, but you know, Simon, part of it is then, okay, so we've had this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But does this conversation just drop and everybody moves on to the next hashtag, the next trending component? And then where does this go? What is the action items, I guess, the action items from this movement?
Well, in this case, I mean, if people are using doctor in front of their name on social media,
a lot of women changed their titles for their names as Dr. So-and-so. And many of the comments that I came across, even from my own colleagues that you know, were following each other on Twitter, is, wow, I actually thought saying Dr. So-and-so was me being arrogant.
Yeah.
I mean, that is how many women feel, that if they put doctor in front of their name, that's a sense of arrogance and I guess feeds into this, your immodesty.
Yeah.
Do you feel way though, Simon, as a male? Like, do you feel that would be arrogant? I mean, you had mentioned that saying doctor in your training would actually be less arrogant than comma PhD.
Yes, yes.
My training is the opposite.
That's so funny. So do I feel arrogant using doctor in front of my name?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually I do. Like, so
but
on
why?
Flights.
But
so
why do we have that feeling?
Because I think that it's a title like any, and if I'm going, I don't know, if I'm just doing my stuff, I don't need to demonstrate some sort of, at least for me, and this is probably,
and you're talking
about
this like in a public format,
yeah,
like how you were going to say, like booking a flight or
yeah
your
so
credit
one
card,
I would never,
I don't know, something
I would never do that on a flight, because I don't want them to be like, is Dr. Landry on board? And I'm like, do you want to talk about science policy or like some multi-sensory
no, you'd be like, not that kind of doctor.
Yeah, exactly, just kind of slink under. So I wouldn't do it on a flight. I did it to go to the most sort of pretentious thing, to the ballet.
Why, Simon?
A few weeks ago.
Simon Landry, this way. Dr. Simon,
yeah,
Landry.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, you don't go to the poor stance. Here you go, the box. And that was kind of weird. It was weird to be told like, oh, Dr. Simon Landry, here
so
are your tickets.
So does your partner have a PhD?
Yes.
So does she refer to herself as Dr. So-and-so?
Clinically, yes, but when she's just doing her thing, no.
See, I think
on wedding invitations, we do put a doctor like before both our names,
mm-hmm,
which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if it's in the appropriate setting,
mm-hmm,
you feel comfortable with it.
Like,
I mean, I feel
formal,
comfortable with it if I'm, let's say, presenting, as I'm brought in as the expert on a topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
Then I think that's the appropriate,
yeah,
I guess, like, arena for it. I don't expect my students to call me
no.
Dr. Hamza, but again, that goes back to my training.
Mm-hmm.
My training was that's not how respect is earned.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And ultimately, it's like, is it in a context where I want to set a level of authority, just
mm-hmm,
like, because that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You set kind of, you're an expert in something. People will read your name and they'll say, oh, this person
mm-hmm
is an expert. Sort of like if you put CPA at the end of your
mm-hmm
name,
yes,
you're like, oh, if this person gives me accounting advice, it's legit.
Or it's like PEng. So you're like, oh, so you did your engineering degree and you went a step
yeah
further. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of, well, at least that's how I see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, are people listening to this and they're saying, hey, I have an opinion on this topic.
We'd like to hear your opinion. And I'd actually like to hear too from individuals that are, you know, PhDs that are involved in with MDs and that kind of that divergent pathway, and that, you know, are we at the same level? Is there some sort of hierarchy
yeah
there? In my experience, there is. From both sides.
Yeah.
From both sides.
Well, I think it's like any institution where everybody has that PhD, kind of like, I think hierarchy will somehow establish itself. And if it's not with this title that works everywhere else
mm-hmm
except at work, then something else has to take that place.
Have you ever had to make it clear,
I don't know,
that you have accomplished a doctorate?
Have
you ever had to bring that to someone's attention?
Yes, when I do really dumb things.
wait. So you justify the dumb thing you did
yes
by, like, I have a PhD.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, I mixed up whatever, like numbers. I actually
yeah
mix up my numbers all the time. And it's like, yeah, but I have a PhD. I can't be smart all the time.
Basically. Oh, hashtag I can't be smart all the time. So I have had the experience where I think I've had to assert my expertise in saying, and I think it was to someone that didn't understand. And I don't like saying this, but I mean, it's like the hierarchy of education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go from elementary, junior high, high
yeah
school, bachelor's
yeah
degree, master's, PhD, and where MD fits in with that. I've had to assert that with students in the past, and colleagues, and it was in a situation where my expertise was challenged.
Yeah, well, in that case, it's like, I think that's totally unacceptable, and it's probably because you're a woman, honestly. Mm-hmm. But
can I tell you something that's a little bit strange, Simon?
What's that, Dina?
So I can perceive myself. So I can perceive that some interactions are a result of me being a woman. Mm-hmm. But I don't often recognize that I'm a woman of color.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because I clearly am.
Yeah. And
I'm clearly not, you know, I'm not from generation. Yeah, I'm not. I'm clearly not white.
Uh-huh. You can say it. It's fine.
Isn't that interesting?
It is, and I honestly don't know what that's like because I'm a white man, so
full of privilege. Yeah.
It's that privilege, exactly. So that, I think that's kind of, it covers it, but also, as always, it just brings up more questions. That's kind of science.
I tend to, when all these trends happen, mm-hmm. I tend to want to have some sort of consensus. So what is the response from Globe and Mail? Like, are they going to change their policy on how they refer, how they, I'm going to use this word, award titles to experts in their articles? I mean, I was featured in an article in December, last December, and they didn't call me. Not bragging. It was Folio, our University of Alberta newspaper, online newspaper.
That featured your sister on the cover? The same one?
No, that's a different one. Oh. That's a different one.
They were like, we already had a Dina Hamza, Dr. Hamza.
Yeah, they're like, no. No, but in this one, they referred to me as Dina Hamza, who's a mental health expert who has a doctorate. But for other individuals that are physicians, it would be Dr. So-and-so. So I did actually have that experience. Yeah. But what I'm getting at, Simon, is here, like, as you mentioned, okay, so we are past the trending moment of immodest women, but what is the consensus? What is the action after this trend?
Yeah. So hopefully, if you're listening to this and you have opinions, you will share them with us at Dina. What's our Twitter?
At
DYES_podcast. Yeah. So let us know on the Twitter. And if you like this, you can go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We'd seriously appreciate it. Really helps us out. If you didn't like it so much, it's fine. You don't need to leave a review. Don't worry about it. And so in 2 weeks, we are going to have an episode called Buck a Beer, or The Death of Evidence-Based Policy.
Ooh. We're going to have to talk about these terms that we throw out, evidence-based.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
That could be the entire episode.
It could be.
So, yeah, I had a really fun time, Dina. Also, I actually really appreciate doing these things with you. They're really the highlight of my 2 weeks.
And, yeah, I have a lot of fun, Simon. And I think we bring different viewpoints, and I think that's really important. And I'm really proud of you for your Make Right project. Great work.
For my hashtag Make Right.
Yeah, hashtag Make Right project.
All right. Well, have a nice week, Dina.
You too. Bye, Simon.
Bye.